Hi gang, Bob Boving here for The Mystery Project. Last week, we began a serial mystery designed to take us through the holiday season. It's called Find the Lady. A used car salesman named Andrew Marsh is finding that circumstance and misunderstood incidents can prove to be a deadly mix. In the play by David Ellis, Andrew Marsh started out losing his checkbook. Then police investigating fraud with phony names on checks think he's lying. Andrew believes a girl named Sheila Ramsey must have stolen his checks when he was visiting her apartment, and now he can't find her. His friend Roger Sherwin, who introduced the girl, volunteers to help locate her. But before he can report on his search, he is run down and killed in a hit and run. Episode 2 of Find the Lady, in which Andrew loses a friend.
Are you going to tell me the truth this time?
I've told it to you already. Someone from this hospital phoned me at the King's Head and told me Roger Sherwin had been in an accident.
But we know that's impossible, don't we, sir? They didn't know who the deceased was until you told them.
Joyce, what the devil are you doing here?
I heard Roger had been in an accident. How is he?
I'm afraid he's dead.
Dead? Oh, no.
How did you find out that I was at the hospital?
Well, I had to see you about something, so I called in at the garage, and Mr. Rodney said you'd gone to the King's Head. I followed you there, and the landlord, what's his name?
George Phillips.
Yes. He said you'd had a phone call from the hospital about Roger, so
did you hear that, Constable?
Yes, I heard it, sir. I take it you know this lady.
This is my wife.
Oh, I see, sir. Now, Mrs. Marsh, how did the landlord know Mr. Marsh had had a phone call from the hospital?
He found out from his wife. She took the call. If you'd rung the King's Head, they'd have told you so. By the way, why didn't you ring them?
Oh, well, sir,
Well, Constable?
Well, it didn't seem necessary, sir. Your firm said they didn't know anything about any call from the hospital, so...
So you took it for granted that I was lying?
Well, even if you weren't, sir, there's still a lot that needs clearing up.
I'm well aware of that. Can I go now, Constable?
Just wait while I check with the King's Head, if you don't mind, sir.
Andrew, you'd better phone Mr. Rodney. He expected you back this afternoon.
Yes, all right. Joyce, why did you go round to the garage?
Well, I had to see you about the car. I left it while I did my shopping, and when I came back, it had gone.
That's all I need. Have you told the police?
No, I thought you'd do that.
Well, perhaps our friend will take care of it. I'll have to leave you to cope with him.
Where are you going? Back to work?
No, I want to have a look round Roger's boat.
It'll be locked up.
Harry's got the key.
Harry?
The old chap from Harley's, the people who hire motor launches. He did odd jobs for Roger. I want to see if I can find something, and I've got to do it before the police trace Roger's address.
Well, that's one point cleared up, sir. Mrs. Phillips confirmed that you had a phone call, but she says the caller didn't say who was speaking.
No, he didn't. He only said it was the hospital when I took over. Is it all right if I go now?
Yes, sir. Oh, we shall want to get in touch with you again.
Well, you have my address. Look, can I ask you to do me a favour? Mm. Our car's been stolen. Would you report it for me?
Stolen, sir? When was this?
Oh, give him the details, will you, Joyce? I'll see you at home in a couple of hours or so.
Andrew, what about my shopping? I left it all at the supermarket.
Look, get a taxi. Ask them downstairs. They'll call one for you.
Oh, Mrs. Marsh, about your car.
I left it in the council car park.
And what time was that?
Oh, 11:30, quarter to 12. I can't tell you the exact minute.
And what time was it when you found the car had been stolen?
Just after 2 o'clock.
Hmm. Well, now, Mrs. Marsh, can you describe the car?
It's a Jaguar, 6 or 7 years old.
What size engine, Mrs. Marsh?
Oh, good heavens, I haven't the slightest idea.
Well, do you know if it's one of the small Jags or one of the big ones?
One of the small ones, I suppose.
And the colour?
White.
Registration number, Mrs. Marsh?
Oh, you'll have to ask my husband. All I know is it's got 2 9s in it.
2 9s? Mm. Has he by any chance got a GB plate on the back?
Yes. Why, have you found it already?
No, Mrs. Marsh. Well, I think that's all. I'll pass these details on to the station.
Thank you.
Oh, well, there's just one other thing. Do you know where your husband went off to?
No, I don't.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Marsh. We'll be in touch with you.
I can go now.
Yes.
CRD, Detective Sergeant Rankin.
Oh, Sarge, this is Ted Russell, 127. Mm-hmm. You're making inquiries about this bloke, Andrew Marsh, aren't you?
Yes, what of it?
According to his missus, their car was nicked this morning.
It's a small white Jag with a GB plate on the back.
Get to the point, Russell.
Oh, okay, Sarge. You know this hit-and-run job?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got a description of the car from an eyewitness. She could have been describing Marshy's car.
Mind yourself on the gangplank, Mr. Marsh. It's a bit slippery.
I'll watch it, Harry.
Here we are, then.
Thanks, Harry. Shall I take the key?
Well, there's nothing doing this afternoon. I'll give you a hand if you like. You'll be packing his gear, I suppose.
Not now. Listen, I'm in a spot of trouble. Mr. Sherwin was trying to help me. That could have been why he was knocked down this morning, to stop him interfering.
Struth.
He started to tell me something on the phone, a girl's address.
Oh, if that's all you want, he had plenty of them.
Now, this is a particular girl. I believe he found out where she's living now, and I'm hoping he made a note of it.
Looks like he left you in a hurry this morning.
Oh?
Yeah, bed isn't even made. He was fussy about things like that.
Didn't he have anyone to clean the boat?
Nah, he always said he liked doing it himself. And he had the time. He didn't work regular hours, did he? What sort of line was he in, Mr. Marsh?
I've no idea.
What you got there, Mr. Marsh?
Checkbooks, Harry. Excuse me, will you?
Oh, sorry.
That's all right. I only want to get at that notepad.
Found something, have you?
I'm afraid I have.
Is that the address you wanted?
No. It's something that might be just as useful, though.
Busy, Mr. Marsh?
What? Oh, good afternoon, Sergeant Rankin. Mind your head, the doorway's on the low side. Harry, there's no need for you to stay. I'll lock up and let you have the key.
Okay. I'll see you later then, Mr. Marsh.
Yes, and thanks for your help.
You know, I had an idea I might find you here. What are you doing on this houseboat?
I was just going to ask you the same question.
I'm not obliged to answer.
All right. You know Roger Sherwin was killed this morning?
Yes.
Well, he was a friend of mine. I'm taking care of the arrangements.
The funeral, you mean?
Yes.
You must have left the hospital and come straight here. You are in a hurry, aren't you?
I thought I ought to start clearing up his effects and so on. And there are probably people who have to be notified.
Relatives?
Well, as far as I know, he's only got an aunt, but well, there might be someone else. Friends, business acquaintances.
Yeah.
The logical place to find out seemed to be among his papers.
And what have you found so far?
A few bills, letters, mostly from girlfriends.
I'll have a look here, if you don't mind, Mr. Marsh. And what's under these papers? Checkbooks, eh? One, two, three, four of them. All on different banks, too. You weren't trying to hide these, were you, Mr. Marsh?
No, I'd only found them just before you arrived.
I had you now. Then you won't have a time to see this. One of these books has got the sort of checks that have the depositor's name printed on them. And the name on these is Sheldon Everard. Now, what was your friend, Mr. Sherwin, doing with a checkbook that belongs to a Mr. Sheldon Everard?
I've no idea.
Pity it's a Saturday afternoon, Mr. Marsh. We'll have to wait till Monday to get an answer to that one. I'll tell you what I think it'll be, though. These banks never heard of Mr. Sherwin. And if I'm right, then it's going to look like your friend's mixed up in this dud check racket.
If you're right.
I'll bet my pension on it. Now, why did you say you tried to hide those checkbooks?
What I said was I didn't try to hide them. I'd only just found them.
Well, let's suppose it wasn't the truth. Why would you have shoved those checkbooks under that pile of papers? Any suggestions, Mr. Marsh?
No.
Oh, well, I've got a couple. One, you'd guessed your friend was mixed up in something crooked and you wanted to protect his good name. Don't speak ill of the dead, that sort of thing. How does that sound to you?
Makes me a very noble character, doesn't it?
Just what I thought. Let's get on to suggestion number two. You hid those checks because you were both mixed up in something crooked and you wanted to protect your good name. Don't speak ill of the living. That sort of thing. How does that sound to you, Mr. Marsh?
Like something out of Detective Sergeant Rankin in Wonderland.
Smart comebacks won't do you any good, Mr. Marsh.
Will anything do me any good where you're concerned, Sergeant?
The truth might.
But you don't believe it when I tell it to you.
Because you never give me any evidence to back it up. Let's go back for a minute to Mr. Sherwin's accident. How did you find out about it?
The hospital phoned me at the King's Head.
Someone phoned you at the King's Head. We've only your word for it that it was the hospital.
What other way could I have found out?
Well, I'll tell you. Your car was reported stolen this morning. Your wife described it as a small white Jag, 6 or 7 years old, 2 9s in the registration, GB plate on the back, correct?
Yes.
The witness to the accident described the car that mowed down Mr. Sherwin as a white Jaguar. She didn't know what year it was, but it had one of those plates on the back with the letters GB. If you'd been driving your car, Mr. Marsh, that's one other way you could have found out that your friend had been knocked down.
So now you're accusing me of stealing my own car and killing Roger Sherwin?
I'm suggesting it's a possibility. And by what our eyewitness says, murdering him would be a better way of putting it.
Most murders aren't committed without a motive.
I think I know what yours was. Now, yesterday you told me that before you say wrap it up, I'll take it, you have to know the price of what you're buying. Yet 3 years ago, you could afford to go shopping in Cairo. You were a sales representative, earning in damn good money. You travelled all over this country, staying in swank hotels, and you put the bill on your expense account. But last Christmas, your firm was taken over. You and 3 or 4 others were shown the door. They gave you a chromium-plated handshake, but after the sort of jobs you've had lately, I'll bet there isn't much of that left. I'd win my bet, wouldn't I, Mr. Marsh?
You don't have to ask me, do you? I'm sure a typical policeman only bets on certainties.
You'd be right. On the wages you're bringing home now, it must be hard work keeping your wife in the style she's been accustomed to.
She's had to change her style. We both have.
When I met her yesterday, Mr. Marsh, she didn't strike me as the sort of woman who's hard up for a few bob.
Oh, don't be misled by appearances. The clothes she's wearing now were bought a long time ago. You're not concentrating on the road.
Well, we were talking about Mrs. Marsh, weren't we? Supposing she's been making life a bit difficult for you because she had to walk past shops instead of going in them. You talked it over with your friend Roger Sherwin, and one of you came up with the idea of using dud checks to buy the things that would make Mrs. Marsh easy to live with again. And it turned out to be so easy, you thought, why not branch out? So far, Mr. Sherwin wouldn't have been getting anything out of it. But if you'd bought stuff and flogged it in the right quarters, there'd have been cash to split between you. No comment, Mr. Marsh?
Not at the moment. I thought we were going to my flat.
Later. Get out, Mr. Marsh. You know where we are?
Where Roger was knocked down.
Where he was murdered. You were here this morning, weren't you?
No.
I believe you were. Now, when you came round that corner and drove straight at him, what was your motive? Well, I'll give you two. Either you'd quarrelled over the profits of the dud check racket, and you were going to settle the argument in your favour, or your partner knew we suspected you, and to save his own neck, he decided to talk, so you were going to shut his mouth permanently. Which was it, Mr. Marsh?
Neither. You're breaking quite a lot of rules today, aren't you? You've parked on double yellow lines.
Get back in the car, Mr. Marsh.
Well, don't look so bad-tempered. Just because your plan to frighten me didn't work.
I wasn't trying to frighten you.
Then why the off-the-record chat? Why show me where Roger was killed?
I'm trying to convince you that the sensible thing for you to do is to make a statement.
To save you having to go to the trouble of finding more evidence against me?
I have enough evidence already.
If you had to be locked up, not joyriding with you. Oh, I know you've no doubts that I'm guilty. But you have to make absolutely certain that a jury would agree with you. At the moment, I don't think they would.
Don't be too sure.
There's only one thing I can be sure of. The truth doesn't always come out, does it?
Andrew, he's phoned you twice since I came home. I promised you'd ring him as soon as you could.
I'll call him later.
Don't keep him waiting on my account, Mr. Marsh. We don't want you to lose another job, do we?
Please, Andrew, go and speak to him now.
2 against 1, Mr. Marsh. Majority verdict.
Oh, all right. I'll only be a couple of minutes.
Did your husband tell you what I was doing here yesterday, Mrs. Marsh?
He said it was something to do with the checkbook he'd lost.
Is that all?
I think so. No, wait a minute. He said someone had used the checks and signed them with a false name.
That's what he told you, is it?
Is there any more?
Did I say there was?
No, but there was something in your voice.
I'd better watch it then, Mrs. Marsh. Giving things away like that. I don't want to cause trouble between you and your husband.
Trouble, Sergeant? I don't understand.
Oh, forget it, Mrs. Marsh. It isn't worth bothering about. Tell me, is Mr. Marsh a generous husband?
He used to be.
Has he bought you any presents lately?
He sent me some flowers on my birthday.
That's all?
No, Yes, why do you ask?
Oh, just curious. When you got this job, I thought you might have bought you a new fur coat or something.
Obviously, you don't know how much a second-hand car salesman earns.
Made your peace with the boss, Mr. Marsh?
Yes.
Well, I'll be on my way then.
I thought we were going to continue our unofficial chat.
I have decided to postpone it for the time being. I'll find my own way out. Good afternoon, Mrs. Marsh.
Good afternoon, Sergeant.
What did he ask you, Joyce?
Never mind that for a moment. Andrew, did you tell me the truth about why he came to see you yesterday?
Yes.
Sergeant Rankin dropped a very clumsy hint, implying you hadn't been completely honest with me.
Did he? I thought he had another reason for wanting me to phone Bill Rodney. He doesn't give a damn whether I lose my job or not. He just wanted to get me out of the way. Oh, all right. I'll tell you the rest of it. I was going to, anyway.
Good.
While you were looking after your mother, I dropped in the King's Head one night. You'd been away 3 or 4 weeks. You can't talk to a television screen, not if you want an intelligent conversation. So the pub seemed like a good idea. Roger was there, in the middle of the usual crowd of females. He introduced me to a girl called Sheila Ramsey.
Surely there were other people you could have talked to? It didn't have to be some girl you picked up in a pub.
I couldn't think of anyone. Being away so much, I'd lost touch with my own friends.
It was always Roger.
Oh, he had heard my troubles so often, he must have been sick of listening to them.
So you chose a complete stranger?
I thought it was the best solution at the time. I'd found out that I'd never make a fortune selling second-hand cars. I'm not much good at the glib line of patter that's required. I'd spent hours in the flat on my own, wondering what the hell to try next, and I hadn't got anywhere. I thought a stranger might be able to suggest something.
I can think of a lot of things an attractive girl might suggest to you. But how to make your fortune wouldn't be one.
It's easy to sit there and be bitchy, Joyce.
Well, how do you expect me to behave? Oh, it's not so much the girl, Andrew, but the fact that you preferred to cry on her shoulder rather than mine.
Yes, well, we've got out of the habit of comforting each other, haven't we? Anyway, you weren't there.
There's a very good train service to Brighton.
Oh, Joyce, try to understand. I didn't go to the pub with the deliberate intention of picking up the first available female. I went because, well, I was feeling sorry for myself, I suppose. I thought a couple of drinks might make me feel less suicidal. Then Roger introduced me to Sheila. She encouraged me to talk about myself, and that's how it all started.
Couldn't you have told her all about yourself on one occasion? Did you have to see her again?
No, but as you've said, she was attractive, and I didn't think I was doing any harm.
Not even when you were spending our money on her?
Well, I know. That's something I can't justify. I can only say I'm sorry. But it must be obvious, even to you, that she deliberately set out to make me want to spend more time with her. She wanted to get her hands on my checkbook.
How did she get her hands on it?
Well, she must have taken it out of my overcoat pocket.
When you took her out for a meal?
No.
When, then?
The last time I took her home, I went up to her flat.
At her suggestion, of course.
Yes. Anyway, I was only there an hour.
Oh, really?
Oh, for God's sake, Joyce, don't you do a Sergeant Rankin on me. Can't you see the object of the exercise was my checkbook?
Then why haven't you told Rankin about her?
What could I tell him? Sergeant, I'm positive my checkbook was stolen by a girl called Sheila Ramsey. Her address is flat 269 Belvedere Road, but there's a man living there now who says she never lived there. That'd be a great help, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't see what else you can do except tell the police. They might be able to trace her.
First of all, Rankin would have to believe that she exists. Unfortunately, Roger's the one person who could vouch for the fact that I didn't imagine her. I've a feeling he could have told me quite a lot about Sheila Ramsey.
But you said that when you asked him last night...
I know. He told me he'd only met her a couple of times in the pub. Well, I don't believe that now. I think he was mixed up with her in this dud check racket.
Oh, really, Andrew?
Listen, I went over to his houseboat to see if he'd left a note of Sheila's new address. Instead, in his desk, I found 4 checkbooks that didn't belong to him.
Mm-hmm.
I think when he introduced me to this damn girl, he'd no idea I'd get, well, friendly with her. When I told him last night about the mess I was in, he realized he was responsible and decided he had to do something to help me. His partners found out he was going to talk, and they ran him down.
Why go to all the trouble of stealing your car?
Because someone seems to have embarked on an operation to frame me. And if the police can be made to suspect me of murder as well as passing dud checks, so much the better.
I'm sorry, Andrew. I simply can't believe that Roger was implicated in something criminal.
Can't you?
No.
Look, Joyce, we know he didn't earn his living legitimately. His money came from the sort of transactions that, well, it isn't polite to ask too many questions about. They were probably just inside the law, but it only requires a push, and you're outside it.
Well, There could be another explanation for the checkbooks in his desk.
What?
Well, I don't know. You're the one who's playing detective. You think of one.
I wish I could. Rankin saw those checkbooks, and he believes I was Roger's partner. The only thing that will change his mind is irrefutable evidence to the contrary. And he won't look for it, so I've got to. I've no choice.
How do you propose to start?
Well, in three of the checkbooks, there were counterfoils made out to the Excelsior Club.
What on earth is that?
I don't know, but one counterfoil was marked subscription. Perhaps all of the men who owned those checkbooks in Roger's desk were members. I can't be certain. But a connection with the Excelsior Club was common to all three of them. So, I'll start from there.
You're going to do Sergeant Rankin's job for him.
As he sees his job at the moment, it's proving that I'm guilty. Doesn't even enter his mind that I could have been framed. Well, I have to prove he's wrong.
Will it mean taking more time off from the garage?
Possibly. I don't know yet. If it does, I'll have to explain to Bill Rodney and hope he'll understand.
What if he doesn't?
Oh, well, I expect the Labour Exchange will be glad to see an old customer back again.
Oh, it isn't funny, Andrew.
If I don't make Rankin change his mind about me, the consequence of that won't be funny either. What did he ask you?
Who?
Well, Rankin, of course, while I was on the phone.
Oh, you wanted to know if I'd had any presents from you lately.
Ah, no wonder he went away looking so disappointed. He hoped you'd tell him I'd bought you a diamond bracelet and a couple of mink coats. Have you any money I can borrow?
A little. How much do you want?
Enough to buy myself a present.
I don't understand.
Look, one of the checkbooks in Roger's desk belonged to a man called Sheldon Everard. Now, he'd made out a counterfoil to a shop in Regent Street. I intend to go in there, spend some money, and then find out if they know Everard's address. He might be able to give me some information on this Excelsior Club.
I'd rather you didn't play detective, Andrew.
Well, what do you want me to do then? Wait for Rankin to arrest me? And don't forget Roger. I believe he was killed because he was going to help me. It'll take more than an expensive wreath to get that off my conscience.
What if someone tries to kill you?
Well, other people have tried. They didn't succeed, did they?
No. But this time you won't get a medal for proving you're a better man than the enemy.
All I want is to get Rankin off my back. Get me the money, will you?
All right. But you can't spend it today, you know. Most Regent Street shops are closed on Saturday afternoons.
Oh, damn, I'd forgotten. Well, I'll go first thing on Monday morning.
With or without Mr. Rodney's permission?
Either way, getting Everard's address is more important at the moment than keeping in with Bill Rodney.
Oh, we've put up with that drill for some time now, sir.
Your staff must find it annoying.
We're more concerned with the annoyance to our clients, sir. That'll be 4 guineas, please.
Yes. Who do I make out the check to?
I'll give you one of our bill heads, sir. There you are.
Thank you.
You have some identification?
Oh, will my driving license be enough?
It'll do splendidly, sir. One has to be so careful, I'm afraid.
Yes, of course. Here's my license.
Thank you, sir. If you wouldn't mind putting your address on the back of the cheque as well.
Certainly. By the way, do you know if Mr. Everard has been in recently?
Mr. Everard, sir?
Sheldon Everard. He's a customer of yours, isn't he?
His name does sound familiar.
Well, as a matter of fact, he recommended your shop.
Oh.
He said your shirt selection was the best in the West End.
I trust we haven't disappointed you, sir.
On the contrary. I don't suppose you happen to have Mr. Everard's address.
His address, sir?
Yes, I seem to have mislaid it. I want to get in touch with him.
It's against our rules to supply clients' addresses, sir.
Yes, well, would this cover the penalty for breaking the rule?
I imagine it would, sir. Actually, I believe I saw Mr. Everard's name in our special order book. If you will give me a moment to find the page. Unless my memory is at fault, Mr. Everard lives somewhere in Guildford. Are you familiar with that part of Surrey, sir?
Oh, good evening. This is number 29, isn't it?
Yes.
Mr. Sheldon Everard's house?
Yes.
Ah, would you tell Mr. Everard I'd like to see him? My name's Marsh, Andrew Marsh.
Are you a friend of Mr. Everard's?
No, we've never met.
Why do you want to see him?
It's a personal matter.
I'm sorry, Mr. Marsh, but Mr. Everard
Look,
isn't in.
Would you say I'd like to talk to him about his checkbook? If you tell him that, I'm sure he'll see me.
Please come in, Mr. Marsh.
Thank you.
Would you wait in here? I won't keep you a moment. You'll find drinks on the sideboard. Please, help yourself.
Oh, thanks.
Mr. Marsh?
Yes?
Why do you want to talk to Mr. Everard about his checkbook?
Well, I'd rather discuss it with him.
I want you to discuss it with me.
And if I refuse?
I shall have to try and persuade you to change your mind.
I dare say you could as well, if I was in the mood. Unfortunately... Oh, I see. We're talking about different kinds of persuasion. You're an unusual person, aren't you? One moment you're offering me hospitality, the next you're threatening me with a gun.
I'll tell you something else about myself, Mr. Marsh. I'm going to enjoy pulling this trigger.
This has been Chapter 2 of Find the Lady by David Ellis. Noel Johnson was heard as Andrew Marsh, with Henry Stamper as Sergeant Rankin. Next time, Andrew Marsh finds his whirlpool of trouble is spinning faster and faster, and that his search to find the lady is only one of his problems. I'm Bob Boving, thanking you for listening and inviting your comments. Our coordinating producer is Barry Morgan. The executive producer of The Mystery Project is Bill Howell. See you next week.